Season 3, Episode 20, A Death in the Family. It opens with Sipowicz coming in with pictures of his new son, Theo, and delivering the news about him. And he gets a homicide from Fancy, a robbery homicide. Two gentlemen shot, one of them, they did not know this at first, but one of them will be dead. When they get to the hospital, and they start interviewing one guy, they figure out the other dude that was shot tried to go in and help a lady who was being assaulted. Andy goes to look through his effects while Simone gets the information from the doctor, and it turns out to be Andy Jr.
Yeah, which is kind of a coincidence.
It's a coincidence?
I just mean, like, how long have you been alive, Kirk?
28 years.
Yeah, we're only in the third year of this show.
Uh-huh.
And already fucking Sipowicz has had more life-changing events happen to him than I think anyone on the face of the earth. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I'm skipping ahead, but by the time this show is over, like, Sipowicz should be in a mental hospital or, like, try to commit suicide at least once. And it's like, it's not even close. It's just crazy to me. His wife almost died giving birth. Then the next day, his son's murdered. Well, like, it's just crazy.
It's not the next day. It's at least a week, because these episodes are taking
place. Oh, that's right. Yeah. And he's, like, passing around pictures of his son. His son's a little older. You're right. And Sylvia's home, so you're right.
And it's...
That makes it better.
It's still kind of convenient that he gets a new son and then loses this one, in terms of storytelling. But we get into the theme song. This is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, go through every single episode of NYPD Blue. And this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. Anyway, quick question before we start. Kyle, did you tear up and or cry?
No, because I've seen this episode enough, so... I didn't cry the first time either, I was just shocked. I also vaguely remembered that Andy Jr. died. I remember that, and I wasn't... It's not like what's going to happen in later on when someone else dies, but I've seen this enough and was ready for it, so it didn't really bother me.
Because I will admit, I got teared up the moment when Sipowicz looks at the stuff and then says to the nurse, "This is Andy Jr.'s things," and then he turns around and looks at Simone.
Yeah, the look Simone gives him is really sad, but, I mean, it's not as sad as when it happens.
It's just so funny because, like, I asked Dad the same question. We watched these episodes together, and I asked him, "Did you cry?" And he was like, "No, these are just characters in a show." But I was like, I mean, you could admit when something is that sad that you teared up a bit. And I can admit that when they share that look and Sipowicz is slowly realizing that it is his son before he looks at him, it's like,
it's pretty bad.
It's a pretty bad situation. Anyway, when they come back from that realization and revelation, the whole squad is looking into who could have possibly done this. We skipped over a famous face really quickly. Titus Welliver played the doctor. He seems to be the doctor that they talk to in every episode, that they need a doctor. Titus Welliver is known, of course, from Lost and Bosch and a bunch of other weird shows.
Fuck you. He's known for Deadwood.
And
first
Deadwood.
First and foremost.
First and
Thank
foremost.
You. Just because you don't watch good TV shows isn't my problem.
We're watching a good TV show now, NYPD Blue. And
yeah, once in your life you watched a good TV show.
I also watched The Wire. That's a great TV show.
Okay, oh, you got two.
Breaking Bad?
Yeah.
he just Breaking Bad, okay.
I mean, Deadwood is as good as Breaking Bad. Wire is better than Breaking Bad. Moving on. Controversy. Talk about it later.
Wire is better than Breaking Bad. Anyway, Greg Medavoy is working on some mug books with another famous face for a brief second, Anna Gasteyer from Saturday Night Live.
Oh, shit, I didn't even notice that.
Yep, that was Anna Gasteyer. She only has two lines and she's not in the episode ever again, but she is definitely in it at that point.
That's crazy, I didn't even notice her.
Yeah, it's really quick, and she doesn't really look like Anna Gasteyer the way she looks all the time, because she's not doing, like, a funny, dumb sketch. She's doing, like, a really serious...
She's not being crazy. Yeah, I can get that.
The Who Cares storyline of this episode, which is very strange, Donna is leaving. It's Donna's last episode.
Yeah, it's really weird to put Donna leaving mixed in with this death, because I feel like people forget, like, lose track of it.
And
you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's also so weird that the way she leaves is she tells Fancy she's going to. She gives everybody a goodbye note, and she gives Sipowicz his personally, but then asks Fancy to give everybody else their card after she leaves, and then kind of walks up to Medavoy in a very awkward moment and kind of goes, "Hey, I'm leaving, Greg, bye, and you should take care of yourself," and then she just splits and she's gone from the show.
Yeah.
It's kind of a weird, like you said, it's very weird to have that attached to this episode where everybody's worrying about Andy Jr.'s...
Well, what's also weird about it is, like, she makes this spectacle to say goodbye to Greg, mm-hmm. and then Greg's like, "What do you mean?" And she's like, "It's in a note. It's all in a note that you're gonna get." And it's like, then why did you even go up to him? Greg should have been the only one that didn't get a note, that you talk to him face to face. Otherwise, don't go up to him and be like, "Hey, I'm leaving." And then when he asks more questions, you'd be like, I don't want to talk about it. Here's a letter. I don't know.
It's also, she also says to him, "Make yourself happy, Greg. It's a sin not to try." And she also says, "Today is such an unhappy day." And like, kind of like weirdly in the middle of her sentence or her conversation with him. It was a weird interaction. And then what made it double weird for me is after she leaves, Martinez comes up to Greg and is like, "What happened?" He's like, "Donna's leaving." He's like, "Donna's leaving?" He's like, "Yeah, she said it's in a note." And then Fancy's dropping off notes to everybody. And Medavoy says, "I guess everybody got a note." Kind of like in his bitch Medavoy attitude.
Yeah, and that's why, like, I'm not saying he deserved anything special from her, but he shouldn't have got a note. She should have talked to him. I feel like.
I mean...
She doesn't owe him anything, I guess.
He put her up on the pedestal after they broke up, and she's just kind of like, "Hey, I'm leaving. Just figured you should know, and quit being such a dick," and... I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it is lost. It's just lost in the whole Andy's son being killed thing.
Because Andy comes back to the house, and every single person in the precinct is working on this. And when he comes back, he immediately goes to Fancy's office, where they run down what they have, which is two dudes are whooping it up in a bar. They start assaulting some people. One guy goes to rob the bartender and owner, and the other one starts sexually assaulting the woman. Andy Jr. came in to take the dude off of her, and a guy came up behind him and shot him in the back of the head and then the stomach as he went down.
Yeah.
Sipowicz makes the point that he wants Simone on as the head of the investigation the whole time.
Yeah, there was that little moment.
And he mentions that he has to do three things in his office. He has to tell Sylvia, his ex-wife Katie, and he has to see to the arrangements.
Yeah.
He then talks to Simone in a very, very emotionally charged scene. The last three episodes of season three is when I pause the most to write down quotes.
Okay.
Because I loved how Andy, like, unloads on Simone. He's like, "Did I get this kid killed? I give him all sorts of lessons. He went in there without a gun. He should have been, like, the gutless bastard that was outside. Or the dude that locked himself in." And then he makes the point, like, "I don't want to see these guys walking into the house and walking into court with their crosses." The way he hits the word crosses was pretty awesome. But the big heavy hitter moment is when he looks at Simone and says, "I want them dead."
Yeah, he talks to him in the bathroom. He tells him all this shit and tells him he wants them dead. And it's supposed to be like this weird revelation, but it's kind of like, yeah, I get it. I would understand that he wants them dead.
As the investigation goes on, they find a homeless guy with a gun who says he just picked it up. They're getting another bar owner in who had a similar robbery. I want to highlight one moment specifically around this section. Because there's a very strange thing that occurs where Diane asks Simone, how's Andy doing? And Simone kind of snaps back at her with, well, how do you think, Diane? Like, it gets kind of aggressive.
Yeah.
I'll explain why that's important later in the episode. But essentially, as they run the investigation, simultaneously, Andy is doing those three things that he mentioned. He goes and tells Sylvia, and he's really cold about it.
Yeah.
He basically walks in and says, what happened? And Andy Jr.'s dead, and she hugs him. And he's just like, I gotta go tell Katie. Stay with the baby, I'll be back.
Yeah, and then he's like, yeah, he makes sure the baby's okay, but he's like not in it.
No, he's clearly kind of shut down.
Yeah.
And then later he goes and tells Katie, his ex-wife, and she's really breaking down, rightfully, because she was raising him essentially like a single mother when Andy was drinking.
This wasn't my favorite scene. I didn't really...
You didn't really like Katie and Sipowicz?
Yeah, I just didn't think Katie was good at... I just didn't think the actress was good in this part.
I think what's
important... I don't know why.
The only important thing really about it is, like, it showing that Andy is not reaching out to people that are close to him.
Mm-hmm.
Katie is really breaking down, and he kind of, like, stops her hug.
Yeah.
And he basically coldly just mentions, I'll pay for the financial part.
He's very robotic.
He then goes to the funeral home to make the arrangements, and he somehow wants to connect with that guy. Because he makes a comment, like, oh, I was teaching him, and he was trying to help somebody, and, like, for some weird reason, he wants to connect with that guy.
Do you think it's connecting, or do you think it's he finally has a chance to, like, talk about himself, you know?
Maybe. Because the thing...
Do you think he's finally had a chance to process everything?
Well, I don't think that really happens until after the next episode. Because we know what's going to happen, but want to kind of save that for the ending. But what I notice mostly is he visits all these people... And the people, because then later he has to go ID the body, and he starts talking to that guy. When he comes up and he's like, "Oh, I hope you get these guys," and then Andy starts talking to him about his son, and the guy's like, "Yeah, well, this is all I really need."
Yeah, he doesn't make him look at the body. Andy does, and Andy bitches about that. He's like, "You think the hospital would be fine? You think like me being at the hospital?" Means I don't have to go look at his body, blah, 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 you know, shit like that.
This episode, because really there's no other, the side story was Donna, and then Andy making the arrangements and talking to people, and the case of Andy Jr. is really what the main focus is. As Andy is doing this, Bobby is running down the investigation, and it gets to a point where it leads to these two dudes that live in a trailer.
Yeah.
And they live in a trailer outside this, like, warehouse where this guy let them live in there if they just watched over the place, and now he doesn't really like how the dudes...
He doesn't trust them anymore for what they're doing.
And that guy's a pretty big character actor. I know I wrote down his name, but now I can't find it.
Yeah, he was in The Fighter. He's Mark Wahlberg's dad or stepdad, but he trains him in The Fighter. I know that for sure.
He has one of those faces that, like, you've seen him in everything.
Yeah. He comes in later in the show. Later on, there's a storyline where Mark Paul Gosselaar, like, boxes somebody. And in that he is the sergeant that's at the desk, and he also is the guy, the ring announcer. He comes back in the episodes.
Jack McGee is his name.
Yeah, he comes back in the episodes as a other character too.
But the thing that's important, because I mean, you can watch the episode on Hulu and Amazon to see how they get here. But the important thing to point out is when they do get there, Diane was forced to be with Bobby because Fancy said, take Diane with you. And while they're waiting outside for backup, Bobby says, I'm going to go in, and really doesn't want Diane to be there with him.
Yeah.
Then, when he goes into the trailer, he fractures the dude's skull with his gun, because the guy went for a shotgun, and then they arrest both the guys. My question to you, Kyle, do you think Simone was willing to kill those dudes, almost execution style, if he was 100% sure that those were the dudes that killed Andy Jr.?
I don't think he was going to kill them. I think he was going to beat them until they confessed, so then they would just, instead of, like, going to trial and everything, it would just be a done deal. I don't think he would have killed them.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Because I definitely got the... Because the way he wants Diane to not be with him, and the way he kind of, like, shuts her down and goes, wait in the car, Diane, or you wait here when she leaves the car. And then when they talk to Fancy, and they have kind of a spat because Fancy kind of gets the idea that he was going to hold out an execution. I think he might be conflicted in doing so, but it seems like he was 100% willing to throw down these dudes if he found out that they were the guys.
I hope not. I kind of hope that he would be a little better than that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do too. That's one of the things that I said it out loud. I was like, that's very un-Batman of Simone's character, because it seems like he does want to just execute these guys, but Diane gets in the way, and then his own conscience when he realizes, oh, these guys are probably not the guys.
Yeah, I could see that. I would just hope that he wouldn't do it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because he's too good of a character. There was a pretty badass moment when, after he smashes the dude's head with his gun, he yells at him, you were trying to shoot me, you scum?
Yeah.
And then another great quote from him when he's in the office with Fancy, and he's like, you weren't holding an execution out there? And he's like, the guy went for a shotgun. What are we supposed to do, kiss him? What are we supposed to do, kiss him? With this information about these two guys, but they're not 100% yet, Bobby says it's probably a good idea to not tell Andy anything.
Yeah, because he doesn't want Andy to get his hopes up.
And we find out later, because they interview one of the guys and they can prove that he wasn't there, because it turns out he was in the system for crack.
Mm-hmm.
Which, a personal note, on guest star appearances, I really didn't like these two dudes. I didn't really like their accent work. And I didn't dig them very much.
Why?
I think the first guy, I forgot his name, but the first guy that they interview in the room where they find out he was in jail for crack, I felt like that guy's accent was, like, too much. Maybe I just don't live in New York, but I felt like it was going too hard on that accent.
Okay, fair enough.
And then the other interview or interrogation they do with the guy in the hospital room... Like, this guy had a fractured skull, and Simone starts interrogating him. That's another badass moment, because he asks him, do you think this is as bad as your head can hurt, when he's holding him up? I don't know, I felt like they were two clown shoes for the situation that we're dealing with.
Yeah, the way he hits him, though, it's crazy. He pistol whips the shit out of him.
It was pretty good. It was good. During this whole thing, Andy also gets a visit from Vince. And that's another awkward thing, because Vince, arguably, he's probably worked with Vince the longest there. Even longer than Fancy, I think.
Uh-huh.
And he even though he doesn't really like Vince, because Vince is kind of like a big dope, he doesn't connect with him at all, even though Vince is, like, giving him the news about the insurance and everything. And if anybody kind of knows what he's going through, it's the guy who has to talk to cops who lose family members and now have to deal with the insurance.
Uh-huh.
And he gives him no space at all to, like, talk to him or be cool with him. He just is like, give everything to Katie and whatever.
Yeah, he's very intent on, like, making sure Katie got shit. It's really interesting.
Well, Dad made a great point. It's because he feels bad that he was never really there until the end.
Uh-huh.
And like, it's true, like, he shouldn't benefit off of his son, because he's only really like, helped out his son in, like, the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And if the police force is going to take care of everything in terms of the funeral and all that jazz, he's like, I don't deserve anything that's coming from his work with the police force that belongs to his mom. And there is a sense when he has these emotional responses that he feels responsible for his son dying, and his son and his ex-wife and everybody else didn't deserve it. If anybody deserves what happens, it's him, but why would they punish everybody else? Because Andy wants to know where they are on the case. He should just be home, but he wants to know where he's at on the case, and Bobby kind of reluctantly tells him, but let's...
They have a guy in a hospital, right?
Yeah, but he tells them, like, I don't think these are the guys. I'm pretty sure I can't be convinced now, I can't be convinced really at all that it's them. And Sipowicz wants to know what hospital he's in. I think Bobby is worried that he'll do something physical to the guy.
Oh, 100%.
So he's immediately gives him a misdirect to get him to the other hospital, and then gets Diane down there so they could talk to him first. And as soon as they get done talking to the guy from the hospital with a pretty solid alibi that he didn't do it, Andy kind of gets frustrated and blustery because he still hasn't done the ID yet. And this is the moment that I wanted to get back to. Diane, who is very supportive, earlier in the episode says, hey, I'm available for walks or meetings because a personal tragedy will probably make you start drinking.
Yeah.
And
he gets mad at her.
He says, this is the second time you've told me that. I got good hearing. You don't need to be telling me things twice. And Simone goes, hey, Andy, don't jump on Diane. And I was like, motherfucker, you just did that earlier today.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
But it's also like, Andy gets frustrated when he's working a case and people come in and are like, where are you? Why haven't you figured this out? Blah, blah, blah. And then Andy and everyone's like, hey, man, like, chill, we're working on it. Well, it's funny that Andy can't see that now either.
No. Then he has to go and make the ID, and that's obviously really hard for him. But another thing this episode does, it kind of did the same thing for the Webster case. It ends with the case not solved, really.
Yeah.
It ends very open-ended, and Sipowicz...
Andy goes to a bar.
that's the big reveal.
Well, that's how it ends. Andy goes to a bar and drinks.
He stops off at his place first to tell Sylvia they're nowhere on the case and I'm gonna go for a walk.
Yeah.
And he says it's gonna rain, so don't you and the baby come. And there's a single moment where she says let us in, and he goes, I gotta get through this. Take care of the baby, and closes the door. And then he lines up some whiskey, and opens up a pack of cigarettes, and the episode ends.
There he goes.
And I'm not a big drinker, but that dude pounded, was it 4 whiskey shots in...
Real quick. After being sober for a while.
Like, he went hard that first night, for sure.
That's bananas, dude. I don't drink like I used to, and I don't really drink constantly or even like consistently. Like I can go like 2 or 3 weeks without having a beer or alcohol or anything. But like when I do drink, or if I do like meet with friends to like go out and stuff, I'm not like, hey, I haven't drank in a while. Why don't we throw back some whiskeys?
And it's also like, because I don't understand. I don't understand bar culture at all.
Why don't you line them all up and knock them all down, you know what I mean? Like, there's no way.
Like, I guess the bartender has no responsibility towards the well-being of the people in his establishment, as long as they don't...
Well, that's not true.
As long as they don't drive drunk?
Yeah. But if you over-serve, you can get in trouble.
Interesting.
Like, if you over-serve at bars or if you over-serve at restaurants, you can get in trouble for over-serving people.
Because it's very odd to me that a bartender sees a dude slam 4 whiskeys straight, and then he just hits the table and the guy just immediately pours more.
Yeah.
Like, it would seem to me like, okay, well, that's problem drinking.
Yeah.
That's a bad news bear situation.
Yeah, but I bet you that bartender is used to that, and I bet you that bartender, like, tons of people probably come in and just go, like, give me four, or something like that, you know?
There's also a moment that I thought was kind of gross for a weird reason, and this is, call me weird, because Andy sets up four shots and opens up a pack of cigarettes and he starts smoking.
Yes.
Which is that was his MO in the first season of the show. But a thing that weirded me out a whole bunch was he was smoking and drinking, and at one point he took in a drag of the cigarette.
Uh-huh.
And then immediately, like, drank some whiskey.
Yeah.
As he was exhaling. So, it basically, he took in a lot of that smoke into his stomach, and then it kind of just came out of his mouth. I don't know why that just grossed me out. It just grossed me out.
Well, I don't smoke cigarettes, but I have smoked a lot of weed in my life.
You? No.
And a trick or a thing, I don't know the science behind it, so I'm not Bill Nye-ing it right now.
Okay.
Like, at parties and stuff,
mm-hmm.
You would take, like, a big hit, and then if you drank something, what would happen is like, it would help, it would help keep more smoke in somehow than letting it all out. Like, I don't know the science behind it,
mm-hmm.
But, like, you would take, like, a big hit, and then you would take, like, a drink of beer or, like, a shot or something, and it was supposed to help, like, so then when you did blow out, you know, when it's time to release that and breathe, not a lot of smoke came out, because I feel like you push most of it into your body, and it goes wherever it needs to go. But I don't know why you would do that with cigarettes. That sounds gross.
That sounds gross. That was Kyle with a episode of Mr. Wizard.
Well, no, man, because, like, a cigarette doesn't do anything after you take a drag. Like, for me, at least, like, I've taken a drag of a cigarette every now and then, like, a long time ago, and I don't get it. Like, it doesn't do anything for me. The reason I like weed is because, like, it makes you feel funny after. Like, but with a cigarette, it's like, oh, this is just, like, death in my body. Like, that's all it feels like to me.
Oh, man. I'm trying to see if there's anything else I wanted to mention. Oh, this is going to make me sound like a dick. And that's fine. Andy Jr. Andy Jr. was accepted as a Hackensack Universe. Wow. Andy Jr. was...
Hackensack University? Police University?
He was accepted as a uniform cop at Hackensack, right?
Yeah.
And he goes to stop this bar assault and robbery, and he gets killed before he starts his first day as a Hackensack cop.
Mm-hmm.
So, technically, I don't really understand why he would get buried in his cop's uniform and be treated as another cop would.
Yeah, because he didn't even,
because he never even put on the uniform.
Yeah, he didn't even, did he make it through basic training? No, right?
Well, no, he was going to the cleaners. The reason he was in that area, which is another reason why Sipowicz might be more sad and feel more responsible, he was there to pick up his uniform because they had to bring in the sleeves, I guess. So he was about to start working as a cop. So I guess he was accepted, and he had his shield, but he had never started working as one. So it's like, because to me, it's kind of like if you were to accept a job somewhere and immediately expect that discount to that company, even though you haven't started working there yet. Like, you've never put in an hour of work, but you're like, okay, well, where's my discount? I don't know. It felt weird. Of course, cops, I assume, will disagree with me, but I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't either, but cops have a good union, so whatever.
Anyway, have anything else to say about this episode? It's one of the highest rated episodes on IMDb of NYPD Blue.
Yeah, it's a bummer. I mean, it's not my favorite episode. I don't know why it's like one of the highest rated. It's like a bummer episode, but it's good.
I think it's just because it really stretches the range of Dennis Franz and Jimmy Smits. At least a little bit. But yeah.
I mean, I could see that. I could see that, but it's still weird.
Alright, every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AsherBrothersPodcast.com, iTunes, Stitcher, where you find a podcast. NYPD Blue is currently on Hulu and Amazon Prime, if you want to start binging it the right way. Right now we're working every other Tuesday, and you can get in notes about the episodes beforehand and we'll talk about it, or I'll mention it in the footnotes. Other than that, keep watching NYPD Blue, and keep listening to Blue Balls.
For sure.
Later! Thanks once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. You can check us out on Twitter and Instagram with Asher Bros Pod and Asher Brothers Podcast. If you just need more NYPD Blue in your life, you can check out Gene Kendall's book, An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. You can check out the book True Blue about the first couple seasons of the show. You can also send us your opinions on the episodes. We got notes from a gentleman, Chris, who goes by Blank and Stuff on Twitter, that was talking about how the only reason Sipowicz acts that way when he's at the hospital waiting for his child to be born is because he only knows how to protect people by being an alpha male. So he has to find a way to protect his friends and family at all costs, and the only way he knows how to do that is to take charge and be aggressive, which is what he was actually teaching Andy Jr. outside the biker bar. So thanks for your thoughts, Chris. Thanks for listening to the show. If you have time to rate and review, please do, or just keep listening to NYPD Blue Balls and keep watching the best show ever, NYPD Blue.